So the questions are these. How can we really activate the best of the private sector to meet the challenges of the real world? Is there a way to accelerate my career that doesn't involve boring online or classroom courses? And can I really impact people in the developing world with the skills that I have? Can I finally feel proud of what I know? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Philippa White, and this is TAI Unearthed. Keep listening, and you can follow us on our journey as we show you how we're connecting the private sector with the social sector to make change. Everyone, Philippa White here, and welcome to episode 15 of TAI's podcast. Now, today I'm speaking with a former housemate of mine, a friend who helped me get my first ever job in advertising, a friend and advisor to TAI since 2009, and he's the chief commercial officer at the start of YBuy, the UK-based business that helps people hire quality products and thereby own less. And I can't wait to talk about everything with you. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. It's so great to have you with us. Now, before we kick things off properly, I just want to tell people a little bit more about you. So James started his career in London in 1997 at a famous WPP advertising agency, J. Walter Thompson, in the econometrics and media research teams. Then he dashed around the world for the best part of 15 years. And this, honestly, for anyone who wants some international travel, this will blow people's minds. So you were in Hong Kong with Future Brand, then London again with Visium and Y&R. You were in Sydney as a new biz guy for a whole host of different agencies, Singapore with WPP, Dubai, helping people get ripped off less by the digital oil salesman, as you so beautifully put it, and now in London with YBuy. So James loves reading and studying. He enjoyed Mark Ritson's mini MBA recently and is tucked into his friend Dr. Emra Sawyer's book, The Myth of Experience. And actually, you showed it to me earlier, and I'm definitely keen to get that as well. So he's a regular public speaker and also hosts an event called TNDP, because the world needs another bloody abbreviation. So, James, let's talk about YBuy or the start. You can start with a story about Flatmates or your help with TAI, or I don't know, do you want to explain TNDP? Over to you.
Don't know where to start. Well, let's start with TNDP, I guess, because the next dinner party was the name of this extravaganza that. When I moved to Sydney, I realized I didn't know anybody. So I thought a good way to get to know people was to meet a few people over dinner. So I created a thing, gave it a name, and called it just that, TNDP, because the world needs another bloody abbreviation. So we would have dinner at a lovely little French restaurant, which we'd then have like a tapas meal, end up being about eight courses. It was a big meal with lots of wine and a group of about 10 of us meeting once every couple of months. And then over the 6 years I was in Sydney, it meant I get to invite lots of agency bosses and marketing directors and media owners and have a nice dinner party every couple of months, and everybody paid their own way and it was all off the record. But I got to know some of the journalists and some of the pitch doctors. It was a great way for me to get to know my way around town. And it was so good that when I moved to Singapore, I carried on doing it there, and then Shanghai, and then when I moved to Dubai over there. And so started up again when I came back to London, because guess what? After 15 years away, I realized that I didn't know enough people in the industry. And the ones that I did know, I wanted to re-engage with. So it's a lovely way of catching up with people. That's all been paid to by these coronavirus days. But, you know, there's always a way to catch up.
Yeah, I think I was at the last
one. You were at the last one. And I see you've been nicking contacts and friends of mine along the way.
I know, because Rob was the speaker, wasn't he? And I met him that was in January.
So I'm impressed.
Of this year.
Philippa, I'm impressed with the people you've had on this podcast. So by my maths, you've had five admin, you've had three forward-thinking NGOs, you've had one Thai staffer, one inspirational sportswoman, and so does that make me the partridge in a pear tree? You know, the whole thing. I really love the fact that it goes to show the whole, encompasses everything that the international exchange is about. You've got the corporate side of things, where you've got the people who've, you know, Adland has been where you started, where we both started out. As, you know, we'll talk about flatmates in a minute. But I really love how you've brought together the business side of it, the people who are paying for what I'm going to call the candidates to go off to far-flung places in the previous models. And then you meet some of the people that they've been out helping, and how that's been important. And then the fact that you can't do it all yourself, and you need to have, you've adapted the business as people have come along and come back from trips and realize they don't fit into their old jobs as well. So having a trainer and executive coach on board makes so much sense. And then having the fact that your strap line, I noticed you at the end of your podcast, you know, better leaders, better companies, better world. Then you have your inspirational sportswoman, Pip Hare, who then brings all that to life in one spot. So I'm impressed with what you're up to.
Thanks, James. Well, I really appreciate it. That was a nice plug for Ty. But yeah, I mean, you helped me get into the industry, which is hilarious, because when I think back to 2001, when we were flatmates in Islington, I had just come back from Thailand because I finished my degree in Bangkok and arrived in London. It was, oh my God, it was 2001, and it was in September because I was flying over on September the 11th. So I sort of arrived when the whole world, at that moment was also in a bit of an odd time. And I had to interview. And you were just amazing. And I remember you grilled me on questions and like, nope, come on, you need to get this. Let's do it again. Nope, that wasn't a good enough answer. Let's do it again. And then I got my first job in advertising as a result of that. So I'm truly grateful. But yeah, we lived together back in 2001. What stories?
It was so much fun when we were young, and it was an exciting part of town to be living in because, you know, Islington's such a fun spot, and it's really quick to get into town. And I was working in Clerkenwell at the time, so I would cycle in there occasionally, normally just get on the train. But it was a really exciting time. And do you remember Chris Barton was in town at the time? He had just started a little thing called Shazam. And so it was a really exciting time to be in London. So the dot-com bubble had burst. Businesses were still growing. Then September the 11th happened and the whole world shut down. And it was a really tough time for business. But you know, things continued and you know, the world continued and it was a really interesting place. And the house parties that we used to have in the house there. And hey, what about you teaching me how to cook scrambled eggs the fastest way possible in the microwave? That in hindsight just sounds disgusting. And then you chopping your finger off with that really sharp knife.
Yes. Oh my God. That was awful. I still have a scar, obviously. That was, I remember calling my parents in Canada and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I've got blood everywhere. My dad's like, stick your hand over the top of your head. What can I do? I'm in Canada. Go to the hospital.
And what was really interesting about that time I was in and out of Hong Kong at that time, where I was working with Future Brand, a brand consultancy, and a project with Cathay Pacific. And because of September 11th, that project that Cathay paid for 18 months of work on sat on the shelf, and I don't think it ever came off the shelf. It was looking at the brand positioning. And so, you know, I'd been a media planner and I'd gone into brand consultancy and I'd been living in Hong Kong, or living back and forth from Hong Kong. And I suddenly realized that the world didn't need to revolve around London. As a born and bred Londoner, I thought London was the epicenter of the world, and it was around that axis upon which my world would rotate. And then it didn't seem to need to do that. After working with, you know, Visium and Y&R, it was a really interesting time to then go out and go back on the road again. You, in your podcast, you talk a lot about cultural intelligence. And I think it was Carter Murray who I met through our mutual friend Nick O'Conlin, who I think still works in the Hamptons, I'm not sure. I met him when we were teenagers, but I haven't seen him since, and he's clearly had a high-flying career. But he talks a lot about cultural intelligence, and it's something that I think is something we need to all understand more and more, is how different cultures come together. And Simon Anhalt, in your last podcast, was talking about cultural intelligence and how nations can build a brand based upon that. Again, the only way to really get that sort of intelligence is to immerse yourself in different cultures. So that's why I talk more about cultural immersion and to go, actually, how do you do it? And how do you make total mistakes? And I don't know if I'm allowed to swear. I was going to say, how do you completely fuck up in different places and learn from that? And it's something that I've done a lot of, fucking up in different places, but I've really enjoyed working out how to work out which way is up in different countries as you go forwards, and how to make a living in different places, but how to get on with all the different cultures. You're working in Singapore was a really exciting thing to do, because it wasn't just Singapore that I was working in. I was in Shanghai, I was in Beijing, I was in Mumbai, I was in Delhi, I was in Jakarta and in Sydney as well at that time, just traveling back and forth, and everywhere had a different way of working. And in Mumbai, I'd spent ages trying to sell in some more programmatic media buying solutions, and nobody was buying anything, but they were using all the right language. Whereas in Shanghai, nobody was buying anything until all of a sudden they wanted more than I could possibly supply with my small team. So it was a really interesting time to be in digital media across a different part of the world and getting to know the different cultures that are there. And that's why I think the idea of being able to get up and get out for a short time out of the day job has been really interesting. But I wanted to take the opportunity in this podcast to totally hijack it and not talk about me, but quiz you. Because I want to find out, and I reckon, having listened to the other podcasts, and especially listening to the ones that I didn't listen to the first time around in the last few days, I admit it, I didn't listen to them all.
I'm so impressed that you've actually it's so great. It's wonderful because they're quite
I drive into London a lot, so I live a couple of hours out. So it gives me a couple of hours each way to because the Wi-Fi, which I'll come to in a minute, is still open even during lockdown and during the different tiers that our government keeps juggling around. So, but on those journeys, I listen a lot to podcasts. So it's been a delight to catch up with some of the different people.
Well, thank you.
It's really interesting because you've got the famous ad men and you really do have a collection of the most interesting and eloquent people. So I'm thrilled to join the list. But you've also got some really equally eloquent but just passionately involved in what might have started as something like a passion project but turned into a movement in a different country, whether you're in Zambia or in India or in Saleh in across Syria and Iraq. It's like, wow, these people have found a massive problem and found a way to help alleviate that problem. I mean, letting children be children is such the Shaishav Foundation is such a strong proposition. I wanted to ask you, how do you find, not the admin, how do you find the NGOs and the charities to work with?
God, that's a really good question. Yeah, we get that a lot. And you know what? I think we've been doing this for 15, I guess I started the process of developing Thai in 2005, right? So we've been doing this for a long time. And when because I live in Brazil, as you know, and when I first moved here, Thai was only connecting the UK with Brazil. So we started it's like anything kind of snowballs. So I just started doing really intense networking with the development workers and also with the NGOs, like really credible NGOs here in Recife. And so I started with just a handful of organizations, really, that I was talking to develop the pilot. So I had a Plan International was one of them. And then Gestos, which is an organization which works with HIV and AIDS. And Alessandra Nilo, she was the first, she's extraordinary. She's a spokesperson representing, I feel like it's the HIV movement, but I'm not sure, but at the UN. So she would every year, I think now just because of COVID, things have obviously slowed down, but she would be traveling literally every month to the UN, and she would be representing, I think, Brazil for the work that she does. So, I mean, I was very lucky to very quickly get in with some very, very incredible and credible people working for some really incredible organizations. And then just by definition, because of the way that development workers work, so they will be based in a country for a couple of years. Usually it's only two, maybe three at the most. So Serviço Internacional or International Service, which is a UK-based organization, they have their development workers that, you know, go all over the place. Catholic Relief Services, also, the, you know, the diplomatic service. So I you know, I'm very close with the U.S. Embassy here. So I would be meeting with people, and then they, of course, would then travel. So I just, yeah, I would meet with people, and that's how that started. So we would have people who would go. So Hestian, which is an organization we've worked with in Malawi, that came about as somebody who was based here who ended up moving to Malawi. And then once we had a few different projects in a few different places, we had enough projects where we often ask organizations if they recommend an organization for us to support. So that's kind of how organically it happened. And then once we had enough case studies, we would then talk. We talk a lot with Accountants for International Development. They are a fantastic organization that work with accountants to do similar work that we do. So we are often, we call it sharing organizations. So when they work with organizations that they really rate, and they also go through a sort of a process of, you know, we always ask for references, and we check who donates to these organizations just to check that they are, you know, above board and doing the right kind of work. But they do that too. So we sort of share these organizations, and it's quite organic. The global giving, is that the right? Oh, anyway, there's another network that works with organizations. So we just network. We're just constantly networking. And I have somebody who works for me full time, and that's her job, or whoever's working for me at the time. But Uli's amazing. Big shout out to Uli, because you are amazing, Uli. And she, yeah, her job is to just network, talk to different organizations, see who, you know, who really are doing the incredible work. And then people often ask us, they say, like, do you support certain causes? Do you support certain regions? And I always say, no, for me, what's really important, I support social enterprises. So it's not just NGOs. And it's just, for me, it's really, really important for the individuals from the North, the global North, who are keen to have this kind of sort of leadership experience. They just need to know that they are using their skills to impact the world in some way. So it could be education, it could be conservation, it could be women empowerment, it could be human rights, it could be children's rights, but we just need to know that whatever the projects are, make a difference. And how it's done, as long as it's done in a credible way.
It does answer my question. I love the fact that you talk about the fact it's not people with, it's not certain causes or certain regions, because there is so much in the world that is so exciting and so brilliant, and there's so much in the world that is so not exciting and not brilliant. And to find ways to make a little difference every day, or to help other people to make a difference at some stage in their life, to jump out of the humdrum, the way we live, the metro bulodoro, the repeat of everything that we do, can be so exciting to get out and do that.
And you're a perfect example of that. I mean, it's extraordinary, the number of places, because if we think about it, to move somewhere is one thing, to get your head around a completely different type of, you know, industry or job, using your skills in a different way, depending on where you're working, depending on the culture you're working in, to get people to, for you to be able to gel with people, for people to be able to gel with you. I mean, you have managed to do that in how many countries? I mean, I can't even count.
I've lived for more than six months in six different countries. But I know seven different countries. Yeah. I forgot one there. But I have always enjoyed getting a group of people who are like-minded to catch up with regularly. And you find them. It's a numbers game, right? But I do think that you know, traveling with a young family makes life much easier because when the kids make friends, you can get to know their parents, and then that's an easy way to get to know more people. So I enjoy traveling with my family and moving countries with them, although I have promised them that we're here for the next 15 years. So it's exciting settling down after a long time of, you know, this different cultural immersion and then trying to find a home to bring it into. And that's why in the last 18 months I've been back in the UK. I've been looking for the right place to land and to do something. So for a while I thought the right place was within WPP to create. So this big agency group is a big business to consumer business. And I was like, right, that's business one. Let's take B2B, and B to other niche audiences is business two. So dropping the second word business of business to business. So just calling it business two and packaging that up for them. And then COVID happened and they said, no, thanks, don't need that. I was like, oh, damn. And then going into another organization that supports LGBTQ plus and black and ethnic groups and disabled groups and various other groups that create content for those communities, and then helping the likes of Unilever and Adidas and other big brands target and talk to those communities by aggregating the long tail. It's a really interesting piece. But then while I was in there, I realized it wasn't the right place for me, and then met Jamie, who set up YBuy.
So yeah, talk to us about YBuy, because I am so excited to hear more about it. Just, I mean, we don't have anything like that here in Brazil, but it makes so much sense.
Which bits of it? What do you know about it so far?
Let more people know about it, because I just think, well, I just know the fact of what you've told me. So I just know that YBuy is why own everything? Why spend, you know, however much you would spend on a weed cutter if you're only going to use the weed cutter sort of, I don't know, a couple times a year? Why would you not just get the best version of that weed cutter and just rent it the amount of time that you need it for and then give it back?
That was really mean of me to put you on the spot there. But the reason I wanted to ask was to see if it actually, the story carries on, because you're right, it is exactly that.
It's basically why spend so much money on just, you know, so much stuff. And I think this is the thing, like the world has so much stuff. And if everybody is buying a weed cutter, then suddenly on a street you have 30, well, more, like 100 weed cutters. Why would you not just have one weed cutter, then everyone just sort of rents?
What's really interesting about the YBuy business is that it means different things for different people. For some people, it's about decluttering their homes because there's just not enough space in inner city living to have the drills and the fondue set or the bouncy castle even. For other people, it's about wanting to get the best quality for a better price. So instead of having the weed cutter example, if you've got a garden and you want to have some garden tools rather than or a pressure hose for cleaning down the patio, one of those, if you want to have one of those, you can buy yourself a £100 one in London, or you could get the £350 one for a fraction of the price just to use for the weekend where you're going to use it. So you have top quality products and it's not peer-to-peer. So it's really nice being able to give people best quality products that has been perfectly cleaned when it comes back in. So it feels like it's new. For other people, it's about joining the circular economy so that they're not cluttering up the world with more stuff, because, you know, we all own too much stuff. And I see that, yeah, you know, Selfridges, the high-end department store here in London, now is, and it's something I read a year or so ago, they're starting to put rental clothes in. They have a concession for rented clothes in there.
That's interesting.
You know, how can we all do a little bit more to save the planet that we're living on? You know, that's we need to start doing, everybody needs to start doing a little bit more. But to do it, here in London, we're not very good at really understanding how recycling works, right? The rest of Europe does, because in the rest of Europe, if you don't do it right, there's a penalty. Whereas here, we're not really sure what goes into the recycling and how it works. And it's about, as a result, we talk less about a lot of the sustainable issues, I think, than our counterparts in other European cities. And I still consider this a European city for another few days. So it's about convenience here and value, because you can get the same product, the best product for a bit cheaper. It's about being convenient because we'll deliver it to you within the hour time slot that you want. And it's just trying to let people do new things. So, you know, a Jenga set for the kids doesn't cost much to rent for the weekend, and it's quite a fun thing to do.
That's so absolutely cool. So it's about, you do games?
It's about the task-based stuff, which is, you know, the sensible stuff, or it's the fun stuff. So you, the fondue set, or the chocolate fountain, or the bouncy castle, or the Jenga set. And so you can have all of these things just for the weekend, or for the night, weeknight, or the weekday. So rent it in 12-hour sessions, whatever suits you. So it's about trying to be convenient to the right people in the right place at the right time. And all of our vehicles, of course, are electric. And it's all about trying to be and educate people about how we can be sustainable. But also working with retailers, that's the stage two part, is to see how do we help retailers sell, not necessarily need to sell everything, but start to recycle things by hiring them out. So that's a stage two part. It's such an interesting and exciting really opportunity to be here.
It is. And it's, you know what, it just really quickly, it reminded me, sorry to cut you off, but just on this train of thought, it just reminded me a little bit of Simon's comment in his podcast, where he was talking about diversity and how diversity, you'll get it in a second, how diversity used to be seen as a, oh God, you know, we need to have a woman on the team because that's just what we have to do. And he said, you know, it's not that, you know, or somebody from a different country just because, you know, that's, you know, we need to just be seen to be diverse. And he's like, it's just so funny because the discourse sort of before, or even in some places, is still that, oh, it's something we just have to do. Whereas he said, it just makes business sense that you know, it's you can be a better company if you have a diverse group of people because you can be more innovative. And I just think what's interesting with this is, yes, what's great is that there's the sustainability side and yes, less things. And obviously that really speaks to me as far as, okay, less stuff in the world. But, you know, you could see some people saying, oh, okay, yes, less stuff in the world. But then it's so great because you say, yeah, but what actually probably speaks to a lot of people is, oh my God, I could have the sort of the top end thing and I don't really need to spend that money and I'm only ever going to use it once and I can have it and then I don't have to clutter up my house. Like it's sort of, it's just great because like you say, there's different things that speak to different people and there's a real business case for
it. The first time I had this in mind was when the idea of the commercial side of it is something that Mark Ritson, who's a marketing professor or former marketing professor in Melbourne and Tasmania, he is now gone out on his own to carry on doing his little mini MBA, and he's a really interesting, very outspoken man. But one of the things he talks about is when marketers go to the board to try and persuade people to do something differently, he said it's not a hard case to make if you can make it as a commercial case. And if you can't make it as a commercial case, then why are you recommending it? And I think that's how the world needs to work. So I totally agree with Simon Anholt. Lucky him. It totally makes sense when he's talking about the commercial value for a country to become, to boost its brand, or for a business to boost its brand. And one of the things that Emre in his book, The Myth of Experience, is talking about, it's not about having longevity of experience. It's about thinking differently and looking at the conventions and looking how to boost something from a way that makes sense in a, you know, from my point of view, it's from a commercial perspective, so that you can then get more people to do more things in a way that is sustainable. And there is a commercial argument to everything. We just have to try and stop people from, you know, being excited about buying the cheap fakes or you know, that are not created in a sustainable way.
Yeah, that's true. Now we're running out of time, but I just wanted to see if there was anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd actually like to ensure that we do talk about, that our listeners can.
Yeah, well, it was sort of mentioned it earlier, but one of the things that we can all do more of, and it's something that TAI, the International Exchange, does a lot of, is helping everyday people like you and me and everybody else try and do something differently that makes a difference in the world. And I remember, I think I mentioned it to you, I think I introduced you to Andy Ridley, who set up Earth Hour for World Wildlife Fund.
Earth Hour.
One of the things that Andy was doing with Earth Hour, for people who don't know what this is was created by the World Wildlife Fund in 2007 to help draw attention to the fact that we could do things better to save the planet and save the animals on the planet by doing less harm to our planet. The token gesture for that was to turn the lights out for 1 hour on a Saturday night in March. And my comment to Andy was, isn't that just awful? If the best we can do as a human race is turn the lights out for 1 hour a year in the way to try and save the planet. And he said, well, we've got to start somewhere. And I thank Andy for that and the Earth Hour team for everything they've done, because it's been gnawing away at me for a very long time to work out how all of us as individuals can aggregate our behaviors to make all those little differences can make a big change in the way we do things. So I think it's something that I'd love all of us to do more of, is to work out what can we do in the next month as we start 2021 to try and do something that is a new habit, to do something differently that is less harmful for the planet. And that's why I think something like YBI is a really exciting place for me to be and to join Jamie and Dennis and Naomi and Uche and the rest and Ted and the team, because everything that we're doing here is trying to make it easier for other people to do a little less harm to the planet and still really enjoy life.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, that's so good, James. I will obviously on the link or on the anchor description, I will be putting a link to YBI and so hopefully people who are listening to this can check you guys out and
may I interject
that,
just let people know that anchor.fm/ Philippa White Tie is a wonderful name for the podcast, because anchor.fm/ Philippa White Tie, I really felt underdressed because I thought it must be a white tie event. And so, you know, I was there and I'm only wearing, you can't see me today because this is a podcast, so I'm actually here in my black tie and tuxedo, just dressed up, but it was a little informal of me. I should have gone black tie, white tie, shouldn't I? That's the name check for you, Philippa White Tie.
White tie. Well, people obviously, you know, who are listening to this and who have never met me before, you know, I always walk around with white tie. I'm the fanciest person.
Really lovely to have a chat to you, and thank you for inviting me on.
Thanks so much for joining. I'm so happy. I'm just pleased to get everyone knowing about YBI. I'm so happy to have this opportunity to chat with you, because obviously you're a long time, well, a very old friend and a long time supporter of Tie as well. So it's just great to have you on here. And yeah, wishing you all the best in 2021 for YBI.
Here's to a weird and wonderful year ahead. Philippa, lovely to chat to you.
Speak soon.
Bye.
Thanks so much.
Hey everyone, this is Philippa again. So this is your chance to get involved with Tie. We have three absolutely amazing virtual opportunities available, all rooted in connecting the private sector with the social sector to make change. Tie has never been more necessary than right now. So if you're looking for life-changing leadership development opportunities for your employees and you want your company to impact the world, we've got you covered. If you're looking to step out of your comfort zone and use your skills to make a difference and keen to meet other like-minded professionals with similar values, then our Tie Accelerator program is for you. There are so many options, so I urge you to get in touch. Go to theinternationalexchange.co.uk for more information, or just shoot us an email. Better companies, better leaders, better world.